Well, hello and welcome to the Bytefix Pool of Experts podcast. My thanks to Bojan Mijatovic for accepting our invitation. Bojan is the International Cooperation Coordinator for Hask Mladost, the largest multisport club in Croatia and one of the founder members of the European Multisport Club Association, for which Bojan is the Director for Development and Sustainability. The Bytefix project is a European-wide movement trying to educate and provide strategies to deal with the fast-growing problems of sporting integrity, especially the manipulation of outcomes of sport, or match fixing, as it's sometimes called. We've already heard from an athlete and a sports lawyer, so now we look at the subject from a coaching perspective. Bojan reached the highest levels in fencing. He's now a coach in that sport as well, of course, across multi-sports and specializing in multiple abilities in athletes with disabilities. So, Bojan, thank you very much for joining us. Why do you think athletes, players, depending on what sport it is, why do you think they are more vulnerable now, perhaps, to this area of whether their sport has integrity?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me here. It's really a pleasure to be able to contribute in this way. The ride so far with the Erasmus Bytefix project has been incredible. It has been also mind-opening, refreshing, and I have really enjoyed also by learning a lot from this area and cooperating with a lot of different European actors and institutions. Well, if we start from the perspective of athletes, I think maybe it wouldn't be bad to mention that we are living in really turbulent and very dynamic times. Technology is going incredibly forward in such ways that sometimes we don't even know what is all together out there. Just talking to a couple of experts who were actually from the area of criminology, and they themselves are inspectors, when they started sharing their stories and experiences, I became threatened because I did not know this part of the world out there. When we speak about sports, we also have to bear in mind that this is a very diversified world. So there are hundreds of sports out there. Let's just say that there are something like 50 plus Olympic sports, just the ones that we hear about every 4 years and in between. But then there are hundreds of those appearing, and it's really a world where each sport has its own institution, its own organization. So trying to talk about some concept and some pyramid, some structure, which would relate to all of sport is really difficult. And I think these are also elements and aspects that make sport especially vulnerable in today's times. The athlete mostly doesn't concern herself or himself about these issues. It's only when some scandal or affair comes out that the attention gets raised in the communities. So this is my experience. I come from a very small sport, but with a heavy tradition. It's fencing. And because fencing is not on the betting market, I guess it's a little bit more secure than, let's say, football, cricket, and some other sports. But there are so many ways in which people who have a very low level of integrity, whose honesty is really not that high, for various reasons, are tempted to cheat. And this makes way to all kinds of different manipulations, of which match fixing becomes one of them. Sorry for a little bit longer approach.
No. Well, it's a really good answer. And I wanted to pick up on that because you quite rightly point out that a lot of the match fixing situations tend to be related these days to betting. So if your sport, as you say, isn't on those betting platforms, it's fair to assume that it is less at risk. But within the world of fencing, and you came through those ranks really in the what, 80s, 90s, competing at the highest of levels. Have you seen a difference in your sport, Bojan? Have you seen, not necessarily at that end of manipulation of results, but have you seen the desire perhaps to cheat, the desire perhaps to use substances to help or things like that, maybe equipment to help? Has that become more prevalent than it was then?
I wouldn't say it in that way. I can also give a particular witness to a lot of affairs because I'm also an international referee, both in fencing and in para-fencing as well. Being that, I have heard a lot of stories that are out there. So you can imagine that when a black card is given in our sport, it's immediately heard about. So everybody knows it. So let's say all the, 500, 600 most renowned referees, they know about this story. Before it was a word of mouth that was very quick. And today with internet and all the communication channels, it's even quicker. So we know about it. So cheating is nothing new. It happens. I have to say that, and I probably might relate here to a lot of other sports, not just the one I come from, and that is usually the sports that are not on the betting platforms usually have this open discourse and a lot of discussion within their ranks. Should their sport be represented on the betting side or not? So there are pros and cons for both, of course. The more traditionalist approach that do not want to change, do not want to allow a big influx of money, even though it's sometimes very conflicting in terms. But those powers are in constant fight or discussion with those that want changes, want novelties. But not everybody's always sure exactly what this means for the sport. So some sports that are, more oriented to the market, that have more professionalism in terms that their players, their teams are better paid, that there is a higher market, that there is a higher market value for this, then these ones are more open to accepting the new betting reality. There is a saying that where there is money, there is always a tendency, it is in the human nature, to try to cheat. So if I can get 100, why not try to get 250? I also have to say, whatever will be done in the future, and I hope that more will be done, because sometimes it's really appalling that the institutions have not become aware of the reality and of the magnitude of the problems that are out there. But I really hope that in the future things will get settled, regulated, but we must be realistic. As long as there are going to be people, managers around the sports, as long as there are going to be possibilities to earn the extra buck, then there are going to be threats to the integrity of all the parts of the sports system, the betting market, and everything that they are connected to. I think it's not bad to mention that betting today is becoming one of the strongest supporters and sponsors of sport.
Yeah.
And I think this is the strong argument for them to be more vigilant and more aware that they have to do the extra mile to stay clear, to stay humble, not to get infected or not to allow the virus of sport manipulation to enter their ranks.
When you look at it, perhaps from your role in terms of multi-sports and that European-wide view. Where do you think mistakes are being made? As you say, not necessarily in fencing, but where do you think in some sports, and you've mentioned major sports like football and cricket, and I guess tennis has issues as well. Where do you think sports governors, sports ambassadors like yourself, but where are people making mistakes in evaluating the possible risk? Because do you think there is too much... do you think people are too complacent and not really evaluating the potential risk to some of these sports from, in particular, betting?
Absolutely. I would say from one side, you have those actors that actively participate in the process of breaking the integrity. So we're talking about the will to do so when they are aware. On the other hand, we have whole levels and parts of sport administration, of sport hierarchy, which my feeling is do not give enough attention and do not take this threat seriously enough. Just by appointing an officer of sport integrity for a huge institution and not giving this person extra powers, is for me in a way like Pontius Pilate cleans his hands, we have done our part, we don't need to do anything more than this, we are clean. But do these people really have the power to first of all prevent and second to detect? I really doubt that they are always given the access and that they are always given the powers to be able to work in this way, because nobody wants to give such huge power to anybody, this is again another human characteristic. As I mentioned in the beginning, there isn't one sport administration. We're talking about a lot of various sport administrations. In some areas, they collaborate, they cooperate. Such high-end institutions like the UN, European Commission, IOC, International Olympic Committee, these institutions are aware that they have to be in the center of everything that is being said, done, discussed, and also they are paving the road for the future generations. But then you have hundreds of international federations, national federations, municipal organizations and unions. You have multi-sport clubs, you have smaller clubs, and then going all the way to small villages where you just have some local clubs which evidently are not aware and do not focus on this topic properly. So I would say that complicity is difficult to define on these different levels, I think that more should be done. The way to go is raising the awareness that this is happening, this is out there, this is a huge market, starting from match fixing, but not only there. And I think it's also very important to mention, sometimes what is happening in match fixing is connected to other areas of manipulation and criminality, whether it is as such recognized and whether it can be processed, it's another area, because international law today, criminal activities that are taking place on the internet, it's not always something that can be processed, that can be properly resolved. And at the same time, the people who are behind this cannot always be processed and caught in it altogether.
And in your role as Director for Development of the European Multisport Club Association, you have some very big clubs as members of those organizations, you must be seeing this debate sort of happening quite a lot more and more now. Where do you think best practice actually is at the moment, Bojan? Have you sat there in meetings and conferences and heard examples of what's going on and thinking, yeah, that really could be effective?
Absolutely. I would say just the fact that this is constantly mentioned and repeated at various events, conferences, and gatherings is a sign that things are going generally in the right direction. I would even say EMCA, European Multisport Club Association, is celebrating its first 10th anniversary this year. And at late September, there's going to be a conference where we are going to dedicate a small part, of course, to sport integrity as well. I would even say that even though our members are old, like 100 years, HASHK is celebrating 120 years this year. We have Lazio that has celebrated 125 years. VSC Vienna Sport Club is celebrating 140 years. So it's a huge tradition. It's a fantastic European legacy we're talking about there. But at the same time, these are very old structures, old organizations. Sometimes they have not brought up their management in the most modern sense of governance techniques. So I would say for maybe even for younger organizations, it's easier to focus and devote more of its attention, time, and energy to bringing the awareness of this than sometimes for older and more large organizations.
You mentioned that you coach in both fencing and para fencing, and I know you've done an awful lot of work, around disability sport. Do you see changes there? Do you see with the Paralympics becoming a bigger movement every year? Do you see more pressure on athletes in parasport to try and manipulate rules? Do you find as coaches, do you find areas that cause you more concern more regularly now?
Well, I have to be honest, my experience in this area is really mostly limited to para fencing. So the colleagues from other para sports that I do talk about, I have not heard of any major difference than the para fencing world. I would say that para fencing is a smaller community than fencing. I'm always not just impressed, I'm always surprised each time I go to the venue of each World Cup how these people inspire me. Both the athletes, their coaches, their families. I always repeat a small story. It happened at the Warsaw World Cup some 5 years ago. A competitor who competed first time in his life. And in para fencing, you have the first round where you fence with each one in the group. So you do five or six bows. So this guy is losing 5-0, 5-0, 5-0, 5-0. And like in the last match, he gives one touch. So his parents were close to the piste, to the frame. His coach was. So the happiness, the incredible joy that happened when that one touch occurred. I don't know how to explain this. It's like the golden Olympic medal for somebody. And that one point was like a lifetime achievement. And I was the referee, so I had to stay professional. And with my temperament, I had to stay focused. After I brought in the paper of the first round, I went to the toilet and I cried like a small baby. This is something that is very difficult to explain to people who have never witnessed this. Apart from, you know, there is a fantastic movie on Netflix, The Rising Phoenix, which gives a small glimpse into this world. But somehow I share the belief and the feeling that the parasports is one of the best parts of the sport world nowadays, because somehow all these people, they had a difficult path to get there. You know, it's not just like I started doing athletics, I started doing rugby when I was 4, 5, or 7, and then it goes up. You know, these people, they all had some tragic occurrence or happening that made them the way they are. So they learn how to cherish life in a hard and difficult way. And I think this is a strong part why their integrity, I would say, is automatically stronger than maybe from somebody who has not gone through this hard path of life.
But and as you were speaking, I was thinking exactly that, that it is a case of the smaller, the family, if you like, of the sport, but also the greater the desire to succeed in the sport. And maybe when we take that to the top end of non-para sport, but of conventional sport, is that where it's been lost, do you think? The old, going back to the very start of the Olympic Games, is that what's been lost most of all, which has allowed manipulation and a lack of integrity to creep into sport?
Well, I have a saying that because I basically come from an amateur sport, and we see generally in modern sports various forms of professionalism taking place. Is it either that you are paid as a player, as a coach, as a manager, or you receive incredible sponsorships that without your sport results would be unimaginable. But whatever the case here is, I always say when you have a purely volunteering space and when people are doing it exclusively because they love their sport, their discipline, or whatever their function in the sports system is, the level of integrity is always very high. The moment money starts coming in, there is also a huge threat for corruption as well. Money itself brings a distortion, or at least, let's say, a challenge to the Olympic ideals. And again, it will never be totally abolished because it's in human nature. But today's world with the sponsors, with money that is pouring in sometimes to the top athletes, and the desire to become one of those and to maintain your position. We have seen athletes that are able to reach the top of the world, but then they with years, they're not able to stay on top. And they reach out to, let's say, doping. We all know the cycling story out there that sticks out. This is a fantastic case. You know, with years, because of sickness, because of the fall of your physical performance, you want to stay on the top, and then you are challenged to use or to take something that is forbidden in order to maintain your top level position.
Performance, yeah. And you work a lot, of course, with sports governing bodies and the people within those governing bodies. I'm looking at the European Multisport Club Association. It seems like a really good framework and a really good model almost that for other areas of sport to follow, because it seems like exchange of information, and you've been involved with BikeFix, I know, from the start really, but the exchange of information, the development of education does seem to be the key in tackling people that want to get into sport for the wrong reasons. But sport itself has people in management positions who don't want to change. It's what they've always wanted to do. It's how they've always done it sometimes. Are they the biggest stumbling block to sport becoming stronger and more able to repel international crime gangs, perhaps, that want to get into sport?
They certainly play their role in this. They certainly have a responsibility in the way that you laid it out. We also have to be aware that today's world is increasingly complex and fast changing. We also have to bear in mind that, let's say, average sport administrator or manager receives every day heaps of information from various sectors of the sport activities. And it's really, sport is linked to all parts of the social system and the welfare, the market, the economy, the finance. It's really difficult, you know, to also make to choose what you are going to attend to, what you are going to focus on. And to us, it's clear that sport integrity should always remain the highest priority. Why? Because all the other pillars are connected to it, and this is the fundament. This is the establishment for everything else. This is, like, let's say, the rules of all the modern sport events, games, activities, competitions, and so on. And if there is a concern there in the fundament, then you can just imagine how long this can develop into unwanted and negative directions.
And just as we close, Bojan, you have become a very respected coach in fencing, as you say, across both fencing and para-fencing. You must sit and look at other coaches at other sports, and I know all coaches tend to look at each other and try and see what they can learn. Is the relationship between coaches and their athletes key to all of this? Because whenever anything starts to go wrong, the mood of the athlete might become more depressed, the athlete perhaps being more persistent in wanting a different form of medication or something like that. Are coaches not almost the single most important thing in protecting a sport, in that they can see trends, they can see the way things are going, perhaps sooner than
I think we just lost Andrew for a second there. Sorry, Andrew, we lost
okay.
You.
Okay. Are you back with us, Bojan? Can you hear me again? Yeah, I'll ask that question again, Bojan. I'll ask that again. Bojan, you've got tremendous experience as a coach, both in fencing, para-fencing, and across different sports as well. Would you say that the role of a coach, being the confidant, if you like, the friend of an athlete, the mentor, that their role in spotting trends, spotting where athletes, young athletes, perhaps obviously in other sports to yours, but in tennis, table tennis and other sports like that, where sports integrity has become a problem, would you say that the role of the coach is perhaps as important, if not more important, than even sports administrators? Because you can spot trends, you can spot things going wrong sooner than anybody else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. First of all, I just have to say that I'm probably one of the worst coaches in the world in fencing and para fencing, because I'm doing everything else so much that my two pupils that I have, they see so little of me. I tend to communicate and work a lot with coaches, and I see a lot of coaches. And of course, when refereeing, you are not just refereeing to the athletes in team competitions, but always also in individual. Somewhere on the side of the pitch, there is the coach who is following every move. And if he dislikes something, he will show his dissatisfaction. So you have to work with all of them. Absolutely, the coach is the most important factor in upbringing the athlete to the highest level. And if the coach has high integrity, then the chances are that he will educate and develop his athlete in the same manner. So we have seen around, wherever there is some suspicion about doping in sports, it's usually linked to the same coaches.
Yeah, that's true. And that's been proven by law, hasn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So unfortunately, yes. Does the international community tend to isolate these figures as much as they can? I think so. Were they a little bit late on processing the Russian ones? And I'm sure that they weren't the only ones, but they were certainly the largest ones. They were certainly the largest ones performing this. Could this maybe have been detected a little bit sooner? Probably.
Yeah. And looking ahead to the next 10 years, what would be your wish for sport and for the sports integrity people that are battling so hard, like yourself, to work on this? Where would you like to see sports integrity over the next 10 years? What would be success from where we are now, do you think?
Well, I'm really hoping that the world will enter a peaceful stage where more attention would be given to doing sports, not just following sports, but doing sports everywhere around. And hopefully the world does not end in a new arms race, because I always say, if there are any aliens that are watching us, they are probably pretty much dissatisfied into what we are channeling our energy, time, and resources. Sport has always been a cohesive substance. You know, it brings together various nations, cultures. It brings together different people from different classes, and it can make people brought together. But then we have to know what we are giving them in order for them to be together, because if it's the wrong messages, sport can be also very easily manipulated for the reasons of politics, military manipulation, and so on. So I hope in the next 10 years that the world will somehow change in a way that more attention would be given to peaceful matters and less to the aggressive violent ones.
Brian, it's been fascinating talking to you. That you have so many, you're so rich in stories and experience that I know you do so much work, which we're all very grateful of across Europe and across the world. We wish you well for the future, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you. It has been a pleasure. And